So I was thinking about what I was going to speak about today, and as we look at the world in which we live in 2021, it seems that it's an unstable and uncertain world, and so I was thinking about that, but more in a big picture kind of way. And as you go back in history, throughout man's time on the earth, various nations and peoples and civilizations have been worried about the end of the world. So they've all feared that this is going to be the end soon. And I know that when I was in college, there was some guy that would parade around there and received a lot of ridicule talking about the end is near, and he had a big sign and he's out there and he did it every day, so he was not going to be deterred, even though he got a lot of ridicule and hassle from the students, but he was out there every day. And as you look at this issue, you know, it is something that has been an issue throughout man's history, and it's an issue in our time. As you go back in history, just some examples. The first end of the world prediction was something that you find in the Bible. And that was a real prediction. It wasn't fake. It wasn't something that people just feared. It was a message from God that if you folks don't stop living the way you're living, I will destroy the earth. And people didn't believe it. People didn't buy it. And they ridiculed the fellow that was building this huge boat out in the middle of nowhere. And eventually it reached the point where it was going to happen. And the guy building the boat, whom we know as Noah, got on the boat. Animals got on there with him. And the boat was sealed up. And it began to rain, something that was unusual for that time. And so the earth was flooded. And the earth, as the Bible tells us, was destroyed. It was destroyed, and God didn't destroy the earth completely, but he wiped out all mankind. And by the time he got to the end of that, the flood, the earth was very different. It wasn't the same world that it had been before the flood began. But life went on. God's plan continued on afterwards. And as you go further on into history to the time of the Assyrians feared the end of the world. And they made certain predictions about the end of the world around 2800 BC. And they said, our earth is degenerate in these last days. There are signs that the world is speedily coming to an end. So this is way back, and the Assyrians predicted that. Coming forward in our time, you may be aware of the Mayan calendar. The Mayan calendar predicted that the world would come to an end in 2012. Interestingly, we're still here, but 2012 came and went. But they predicted the end of the world or major catastrophes taking place, and it never happened. And people realized what the calendar said, and people began to take precautions as a result, but the predictions came and the predictions went. In my time, people have been very worried about nuclear weapons and nuclear weapons destroying the earth. And, you know, people saw what took place at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they said this could destroy everything, especially due to the fact that they've built bigger and better bombs that can destroy more all at once. But thankfully, none of those have been dropped since those two bombs at the end of World War II. But people fear it, and people are very worried about it and concerned about it. I don't think they're so concerned now. And I'm more worried about what we don't know. What kind of weaponry do we have that we don't know about, and how serious is it? Another thing that is worrying people today is climate change. The people feel that all sorts of catastrophes are coming if we don't take care of the climate change problem. And, you know, basically we hear you only have so many years left to take care of this. And so we have to jump on it and take care of it. And we hear this regularly. In fact, they had a great big meeting in Scotland in order to discuss this. And they really didn't resolve anything, but they did get together and at least try to look at the problems that we have on that front. And, you know, so we'll see. I would imagine they'll still be worried about climate change as Christ returns. One of the problems that was a big deal back when I was young was overpopulation. They said that we couldn't continue to grow in population on the earth because we couldn't sustain it. And when that was a popular idea, there were about 4 million people on the earth. 4 billion people, excuse me. And today, you have 7 billion. So they may have missed that call. But it was something that they promoted and were all worried about at the time. I know that you know throughout history we've had disease epidemics and people have worried about we're going to be wiped out. People, I'm sure, began to fear, you know, when COVID broke out, is this going to kill us all off? And thankfully it hasn't, and we've gotten beyond it. But people worry about it. In the 13th century, you had people worried about plagues that were ravaging Europe, and people felt it was the end of the age, and it was a terrible time if you happen to read about it, but we've made it here to 2021. People get worried about lunar and solar eclipses, cosmic events, and people, when Halley's comet passed close to the Earth, people became very worried, and Halley's comet passed. Life went on, but people still worry about it. Probably you've heard about people worried about asteroids or great big, you know, planets crashing into our planet, and people get worried about it. They've made movies about it, and people do worry about this. You have somebody in 1974, two fellows, one fellow by the name of John Gribben and Stephen Plageman, wrote a best-selling book, The Jupiter Effect, warning that in March 1982, an alignment of the major planets on the same side of the sun would trigger a series of cosmic events. So everybody, you know, some people took, you know, heeded that. They responded accordingly, but it didn't happen. So then they wrote another book talking about the effects of that not happening. So they were both bestsellers, so they made a lot of money on either end, either side of that. How many of you remember the Y2K panic? I remember we lived in Ohio at the time, and people were planting gardens and canning beans and all kinds of things to store in their basements and cellars in order to be ready for Y2K. And everybody thought it would be catastrophic. And guess what? It came and it went. And somebody is also worried about a man-made black hole. Ever since the 1990s, the media has reported that the Large Hadron Collider could potentially create a black hole that would swallow the Earth. Well, that's been around since the 1990s, and we still are going on, and that event has not taken place. Even with all the hype about the end of the world being near, we can be assured that the world is not coming to an end as man predicts. Man's made all of these predictions, and none of them have come true. So is the end of the world coming? I mean, if you remember back some time ago, REM did a song. It was called The End of the World as We Know It. And so that was the repeated throughout the song. I looked at the words. I really couldn't make sense of them. But the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. So anyway, it was a song, and it kind of resonated. So I use that as the title of my sermon, The End of the World as We Know It. So this fear of the massive destruction of the earth is something that people have predicted, but it's never happened. But the Bible tells us something about that, and there will be an end to the world as we know it. There will be an end to the world as we know it, but it's not going to end as man predicts. It's going to end very differently. We recognize the Bible mentions cataclysmic events taking place in the future before the coming of Jesus Christ. Most of us who have been around the church are well aware of that, and those predictions are true. But it's, and none of us want to be in front of them when they do take place. Even back in Jesus' time, as he taught his disciples, they wanted to know about this. They wanted to know about the end of the age. They asked Jesus Christ, tell us when all these things be. When are all these things going to happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? They wanted to know. And Christ did tell them. Christ did tell them, and therefore he was telling us as well. But note that they referred to what they referred to as the end of the age was not the end of the world, but it's the end of the age. And we live in a certain age, and that age is going to come to an end, and a new age is going to begin. But it's not what a lot of people think it's going to be. You know, you think of the end of the age, everybody's wiped out, but that's not what's going to happen. And the Bible gives us that reassurance. It's going to be the end of this present evil age. It's going to end this present evil age. So Jesus, when he was speaking to his disciples in Matthew chapter 24, said, "Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places, and all these are the beginning of sorrows." And all of these things, to one extent or another, have happened throughout man's history, but they're just the beginning of sorrows. They're not the final working out of those things in the history of mankind. Elsewhere, the Bible details those sorrows. The book of Revelation describes many worldwide events that are going to happen in the future, including cosmic disturbances such as the darkening of the sun and the moon, and the plummeting of meteors from out of the sky. These are described in the Bible, especially in Revelation chapter 6. Colossal environmental disasters impacting vegetation, sea life, and atmosphere. All of these are to unfold before the end of the age. And the most powerful destructive earthquake in the history of mankind is going to take place. It's going to be quite an upheaval, but it's going to be part of God's purpose that he's working out here below. The end of the age, as you look at it, as described by the Bible, is a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big deal. So far, it looks like the end of the world, folks, are pretty close to the mark. And the question is, will mankind survive all this upheaval? And you can be assured that they will. And we can be assured that humanity cannot destroy the earth. God will not allow it. He's going to intervene and stop everything before it gets to that point. But he is going to let man go right up to the brink. And that was surprising for me to learn, that God's going to allow man to go to the very brink before he steps in and says, "All right, enough of this." And he's going to stop it, and he's going to intervene, and he's going to move things in a more positive and wonderful direction. And as you think about the things that are going on in the world today, have any of you noticed that there are things going on in the world that just don't make any sense? I mean, and when that's going on, you have to step back and ask yourself, why are these events taking place that just defy reason? Why would people be doing this? Why would people be so sometimes rabid about certain things? Why are they operating in this particular way? And there's a reason. There's a reason for it. And, you know, on Tuesday we were having class, and Scott Ashley does a class on the Gospels, and so we were going through this, and he mentioned that very point. He said, when you see things that absolutely make no sense taking place, there's a reason for it, and as you look behind it, you see people involved, but the people aren't driving those events. You have to realize that there are spirit beings that are evil, and they're very active at this particular time. And we sometimes may think, you know, and as you look at the scriptures and you go back to Christ's time, for example, the demonic world was very busy, and you know, it's surprising. And I happen to be going through the book of Mark, and you find that they're referred to by Mark as unclean spirits, and you find these unclean spirits busy, and Christ comes into contact with them with regularity. And I'll just cite a few of these scriptures to just show you these things were going on in Christ's time. And they've been going on, they were going on before, and they're going to go on, they're going on now, and they will go on till the end of the age. Mark chapter 1:12, it talks about Christ being baptized. So John the Baptist baptized Jesus Christ, and then what happened immediately thereafter? Well, it says in Mark chapter 1:12, immediately the Spirit drove him into the wilderness. And he was there in the wilderness 40 days, tempted by Satan, and was with the wild beast, and the angels ministered to him. So Christ was baptized, and the very first thing that he had to deal with after being baptized was to be tempted by Satan. So he willingly went out into the wilderness, and he left where John the Baptist had baptized him. He went out there, and he had to take Satan on head on. And he did so, and he defeated him. And, you know, it's not, and that event is not just mentioned in the book of Mark, but the other gospels as well. And the thing that is you note is that after he defeated Satan, Satan left him until a more opportune time. So he was going to be there, and he was going to challenge Christ. And after he was defeated, Then he said, well, I'll leave, and there will be a more opportune time. So Satan realized that he would have another shot, and he would take another shot because he was not through with Christ at that point. You move forward in chapter 1 of Mark, and it talks about Christ going to Capernaum on the Sabbath day, and he went into the synagogue. And the last place that you would think there would be an unclean spirit would be in church, and that's what the synagogue was at that time. But Christ went into the synagogue, and it says in verse 21 that he taught in the synagogue, and the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught as one having authority and not as the scribes. And then in verse 23 of chapter 1, it says, now there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, let us alone, that we what have we to do with you, Jesus of Nazareth? Did you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. So this unclean spirit knew exactly who Christ was, and specifically said who he was. But I'm sure that the people in the meeting here in the synagogue did not know that this fellow had such a being dwelling in him. But it took Christ being there that stirred this up. As you go on in the chapter, it talks about Christ after sunset. People brought him to him all who were sick and those who were demon-possessed. So all of these people just living in the community of Capernaum, they came to Christ for healing. And one of the things that he had to address was the problem of unclean spirits. And so it says that he healed them of various diseases, and he cast out many demons. And he did not allow the demons to speak because they knew him. Just as the one in the synagogue knew him, they knew him as well. They knew him. They knew he was the Son of God. You know, and knowing that, why would, you go back to the temptation, why would Satan say, if you are the Son of God? There were no ifs, ands, and buts about it. He knew that Jesus Christ had dwelled with God throughout eternity. And God had brought him into the world in a very unique way. So they knew who Christ was. And what you find throughout the book of Mark, especially until Christ begins to make his way up to Jerusalem for being taken and executed, he deals with these things multiple times, casting out demons from different people. For instance, you have the example of the demon-possessed individual living out in the uninhabited part of this one particular area on the eastern side of the Jordan, and he comes up with his disciples, and he gets out of the boat, and he goes out, and he has to deal with this fellow that is cited as having being demon-possessed, and he's got all of these different demons in him, and he's breaking chains. He's naked. He lives among the tombs, and he came out and confronted Christ, and Christ freed him from the unclean spirit. And when the people came out later on, here's Christ sitting with this guy. He's clothed. He's in his right mind, and no longer plagued by this. But this is something that was very much a part of the world in which Christ lived, and whether we realize it or not, it is very much a part of the world in which we live. And it is going to be a part of the world as the world unfolds and comes to a close. As you go back to the book of Revelation, obviously unclean spirits are very much involved in what eventually is played out. I mean, you have the beast, and you have the false prophet, and the false prophet looks like a lamb, acts like a lamb, but in fact he has he's speaking as a not as Christ would, but as someone who's influenced by Satan. So this is something that's going to be a part of the end of the world, and the world is going to be influenced by these powerful spirit beings. So a question that we might And one of the reasons for the crisis at the end of the age is the influence of Satan and the other unclean spirits. It's a reason why we come to the end of the world. An important perspective that we might consider as things unfold at the end of the age is not going to be the end, but it's sure going to look like it. As you look at Matthew chapter 24, verse 24, it says there, that unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. But God has a plan, and he's not going to allow everything to be brought to total ruination and mankind and all living to be wiped from the face of the earth. He's going to allow the things to come to near the end of the age and to get close to wiping everything out, but he's not going to allow it because he has a greater purpose. And he's only going to allow Satan to go so far. And Satan is part of God's using him, and God controls him. And Satan is part of the system that we have to face as Christians. And God wants us to, wouldn't talk about this if it was not something that we need to be aware of. We know that God is going to keep his promise to never destroy all life on the earth, like he did during the Noah's flood. And he told us back in Genesis chapter 8 that I'll never do this again. This is a one-time event. And just to reassure you that I will never do this again, I'm going to give you the rainbow as a symbol. So when you see a rainbow, it is a fulfillment of the promise, or an indication that God will hold to his promise never to destroy all flesh again. So God's true and honest word gives us confidence to know the world won't end in the way the end of the world theorists believe it will. And so when you hear people all worried and anxious and upset and concerned about the end of the world, you can at least say, I don't think it's going to end the way that you believe it is. The end will come, but not as you believe it will come. And as we think about that, one of the things we have to realize is that as all of these things unfold, there will be scoffers who say, where is the promise of his coming? Hey, you've had this promise forever, and yet things keep going on. It's not come to an end. And where is the promise of his coming? Christ said he would come back. If that's true, where is he? Why isn't he here yet? Well, they don't realize that God has a plan, and it's going to run on God's time, not man's time. And the thing is, God is going to make sure that man survives, because man is a very vital part of the playing out of his plan. So Scripture proclaims that the present age, the civilization and the societies we know today, will end in a cascade of unimaginable disasters and catastrophes. That's just what is to come, whether we realize it or not. And in the New Testament alone, more than 300 verses talk about these particular events. So when Jesus' disciples were talking to him there in Matthew chapter 24 about the end of the age, and Christ indicated certain warnings about what was to come, what was the first thing that he warned them about? And we've talked about this, and that is that there would be deceivers, that there would be religious deception. And as you look in the book of Genesis, it talks about that as well. So there would be a massive religious deception at the end of the age. And it's interesting, I was reading a particular book that I'm going to quote from here, and it talks about the condition of young people living in our time. And it was shocking to me, but as you hear what I'm going to read, you might think about how are people going to be taken in by some great religious deception at the end of the age? How is that going to happen? And, you know, at one time, we as a country were religious. The Bible was foundational to our nation and was a guide for our nation, but that's not the way it is anymore. And the book that I have been reading is called Hollowed Out. It's written by a fellow by the name of Jeremy Adams, who is a longtime school teacher. So he's taught for many years and had experience as a teacher, and he's made certain observations in dealing with young people. And it's not that he doesn't like young people. He likes young people. That's why he's a teacher and has continued to be a teacher for many years. He writes on I'm reading from pages 62 and 63 of the book, and he says, "I teach bright young people whom I am immensely fond of, but they, or many of them, know next to nothing about religion. They know next to nothing about religion. Many of them literally believe that Easter is a celebration of eggs, bunnies, and the weather warming up. It really is spring break rather than Easter holiday for them. And obviously, he believes in Easter, which isn't the issue. They don't even know about Easter, is the point. So there was a time in which you used to call it Easter break. Well, then it's spring break, and there's no Easter to it. Nobody even thinks of it. So when I tell them about Easter, and from his perspective, when I tell them that Easter is about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, they look bewildered. And they say, "How many of you?" And he said, "How many of you know that the resurrection is? You know that there was a resurrection." Maybe half of the students, and I'm being generous here, will raise their hands. The most common student comment is, "I don't buy into that stuff. I don't buy into that. I am a public high school teacher. What they religiously buy into is none of my business, but shouldn't they at least know what the stuff is they are rejecting?" And they don't know. They don't know. After all, it is the most important and influential stuff in the history of the Western world, and it is quickly being forgotten. And this will surely have consequences. You know, so when people lose sight of the basic premises for which your nation and your civilization exist, that's a major issue that you got to begin to confront. He says, "Educated people should know basic facts about the world's basic religions. There is a colossal difference between preaching and advocating and educating and informing. For instance, when I was going to college, one of the classes that we had to take had to take a class that had to do with religion in some form. So I took a class about the world's great religions. And it was a class that I greatly enjoyed, but on the first day when I was sitting in class, I was a little worried. Because the guy that walked in to teach the class, he walks in and his hair is closely cropped. He's got glasses on. He's got a suit and slacks and flip-flops on. So I thought, that's unusual. But in California, that wasn't. But anyway, he comes in, and then he begins to talk, and his voice was irritating. very irritating. So I thought, oh man, I think I better drop this class. sometimes you can't stand the voice and it just seems so unusual. But I hung in there and came back to the class. And really, it was one of the most profitable classes I ever took, because he was telling you about each of the religions, but he was not advocating any religion. He was, he said, well, I'm a Buddhist with Hindu leanings. And I'm like, what is that? But anyway, he was a Buddhist with Hindu leanings. And I thought, well, that's unusual. But anyway, he explained them well. And it was a very helpful class, especially as I was coming into the church, because you could see these different ideas and these different philosophies. And you could see there's got to be something else. And that's when I was blessed to be able to find out about the church. But it's a good thing for young people to know at least the basics about these religions, even though you don't accept them. You have some concept of what these religions are. He says, the absence of religion form the lives of young people is abundantly clear. Religious weddings are much less common among younger couples. Most people don't get married in a religious setting. 4 in 10 millennials now say they are religiously unaffiliated and are as likely to describe themselves as having no religion as being Christian. Religious institutions are deemed irrelevant or unnecessary. In raising and rearing children, they don't matter. It's not important. And religion and morality are seen as unrelated, or worse, religious people are seen by younger Americans as being negative all the time. So we just tell people about the end of the world, and we tell people about all the sins, and we're just negative, and we're just no fun to be around. And so they don't look upon many religious people in a positive way. But the real question is not whether younger Americans are becoming more stridently secular. They are, according to the World Values Survey Association. Only 2% of Americans were atheists in 1984. But by 2020, that number had risen to 22%. That's a pretty large surge in the number of people that don't believe in God. The question is not if America is headed towards post-Christian America, it's already there. Post-Christian means that Christianity doesn't mean much anymore, that we used to be Christian, but we are not presently. And we've left those things that used to be commonplace in our country behind. The question is, what will take the place of Christianity in American life? And that's what we have to think about as we think about the end of the age. The answer is almost certainly provided by David Bentley Hart, an American philosopher and Eastern Orthodox theologian. So I looked him up and I thought, I'm surprised that this fellow would quote him, but he made a point that was quotable. He says, we have become sentimental barbarians with a religion of very comfortable nihilism. So that's a big word. Nihilism means the rejection of all religious and moral principles in the belief that life is meaningless. So we're basically sentimental barbarians, not believing in anything because life is meaningless. That's a pretty dark way to look at the world around you. And he says, we not only have that, but we have burlesque gods of personal and consumer choice that command neither reverence nor dread, nor live nor believe. Its fruits are mass culture of things that really are pretty boring, and conformity and self-indulgence. And basically, we're in a bad spot, he's saying. And traditional religious faiths, its dogmas and demands, its entire grammar of communication is antithetical to the worldview and clue systems of many young people. So that's what he's saying, is if you talk about religious things to people, there are certain words that they should pick up and understand. But because of their lack of education in this particular area, you can talk about Christ, you can talk about resurrection, you can talk about eternity, and those things don't resonate with them at all. And that's the state. Not everybody, but a lot of young people are in that situation. They want no standard of judgment save their own. So there is, what are you judging me? And I'm not going to be judged. In fact, for a professor who teaches at Boston College says, as a classroom exercise, he asked his class at Boston University to invent their own religions. And as they do, they leave God out. God's not part of that religion, which is okay. Most of us would probably see God as part of whatever religion we would come up with. But they don't do that because it's not part of their system. They've not been educated in that. They don't believe in that. They want a religion that fulfills their immediate desires and demand nothing in return. In short, the preferred religion of young people exiles God and installs themselves as the center of the universe. So, do you know of anybody that adopted that particular religious view? How about the two first people that were created? What about what it talks about in the book of Romans? That very thing takes place there. A hollowed out existential framework begins by asking, what do I want? And works backward from there instead of asking what is true, what is ennobling, or what do I need to do to achieve salvation. They're not worried about that. They don't care about those things. Like, who is God? Why do I exist? Those are not questions that are even on their minds. And that's a dangerous thing. So those matters are, to many young people, irrelevant. They those are answers to bigger questions, and many others are what you want them to be, and they don't get it. And he sees this in the kids that he deals with. They're bright, they have great potential, but they're hollowed out, as he said. There are things lacking in their life. And as Jesus said, as you come to the end of the age, there is going to be a powerful religious deception that's going to come. And if you don't know anything about religion, then you're susceptible. And you may think, well, why would the world go down this path? Well, they don't have any undergirding to be able to refute the things that they're going to see and hear. And it's and you can see why this great religious deception will take hold. The problem with trying to precisely predict the end from the signs that we see is hard to do. We don't know when it's going to come to an end. And we realize that there are scoffers out there who don't believe in what the Bible has to tell us. But we believe in it because God has told us these things. We can have confidence in them. So however long it is until the actual end of the age, one theme the Bible writers emphasized is it draws nearer every day. You have confidence in that. It's coming, and you can be assured that it will come. And Paul warns us in Romans chapter 13, verse 11, now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. And that message is to all of us, that we live in these times where we're drawing ever closer to the end of the age. And it's something that we need to think about and consider. And also, more importantly, where do we stand? Where are we at in our spiritual lives? The only wise action for anyone who understands what is coming is to turn to God with repentance and obedience. That would be wisdom. That would be wisdom. But you also have to realize, just like with Noah, Noah was sending a message every day that he went out to work on the ark. And he not only went out to work on the ark, but he apparently preached to the people of his time. and how many people believed what he was saying. Hey, guys, if you don't get it together, you're not going to be on the ark, and a flood's coming, and nobody was ready to change their ways and get on the ark. When Jesus comes in power and glory, he's going to rebuke the world for its sins, and we want to be ready for what's coming and be ready in order that we can be a part of it. So what do we focus on? What do we need to focus on? Even though we need to not be afraid, even in the face of terrible circumstances. And there are terrible circumstances that are coming, things that are worrisome. And we, as we're close to God, we don't have to worry. We can realize that we have a relationship with God, and it is God's purpose to save us. It is God's purpose to add us to his family, and we can be faithful to God and be ready for that kingdom. So we need to, there's no reason to be fearful, no reason to worry. And, you know, with the things that are going on, it makes me worried. I worry. So, you know, we've taken a lifetime to save up money and be prepared for retirement. And our retirement is coming. You know, in a couple of years, we're going to retire. And we're thinking, well, we'll be retired and we'll be able to travel or do different things that we haven't been able to do. And my concern is the world going to kind of bottom out and it's not going to matter? You're retired and, you know, your bank account's wiped out? I don't know. And the thing is, you can't worry about that because we have to have a confidence in God, and God is where our confidence has to be, and God will see us through regardless. So can't get too worried about that, and it is worrisome, some of the things that are going on. So we have to stay close to God and examine ourselves regularly. Where are we? Are we in the faith? Are we where we need to be, so that we can be ready for whatever unfolds? And finally, we need to pay attention to the world around us, so that we have to keep watch and be aware of what's going on around us. And the challenge with doing that, I don't know whether any of you have noticed this, if you watch too much of that, what's going on in the world around you, do any of you get depressed? We do. So, you know, like somebody told me a few years ago, he said, I'm just taking a news break, a news fast. I'm not watching it because it just sometimes is overwhelming because it's, but there's nothing we can do about it, but we can continue to pursue God and stay close to him. But we can be aware of what's going on and what's playing out as the world goes forward. Just one interesting thing that was brought up on Tuesday night when we were going through the Gospels class is that they've found, and this took place right around feast time or shortly thereafter, they found Sodom. They found Sodom and Gomorrah. And it's located just at the northern end of the Dead Sea. So they found it, they've looked at it, they've excavated it, and they can prove that these are the remains of Sodom. But, you know, that's interesting. Why are they finding it now? Why now? You know, remember I mentioned scoffers? Scoffers don't believe there was a Sodom. Scoffers don't believe that God destroyed it with fire. They don't believe it. But if you look at the remains of this particular place, there were about 60,000 people living there, and you can see clearly that this place was incinerated. And it's a wasteland. And so why would that be? Could it be that we found the remains of that particular location to refute the scoffers that this took place? This took place, and it's a warning to all of us that we need to look at our lives and we need to make the changes that are necessary to be prepared for the coming of Christ and the establishment of the kingdom. Just something interesting that Scott Ashley and Tom Robinson, who attended the the presentation where this was revealed that it was an archaeological meeting, and so they went and heard all of these things, which is quite interesting. So anyway, I got all of the slides and the PowerPoint, so we'll see if I can get it together where I can present it. I think it would be I find it interesting anyway. But it is interesting what's unfolding. And you wouldn't expect that at this time, but people have spent a lot of time on this archaeological dig and have finally proven that it appears to be the remains of Sodom. So what happens after Jesus returns? The end of the age is coming. And we know what happens, don't we? You know, we observed that as we went to the feast. There's a better world coming. God isn't going to destroy the world. He's going to intervene and bring about a totally new world that we can only imagine and that the Bible reveals to us. So as you hear people talk about the end of the world, you know, you can give them the... How many of you know who Alfred E. Newman is? Okay, a few of you, you really old people. Alfred E. Newman was, if you've ever seen Mad Magazine, he's this really ugly kid that was the basically face of Mad Magazine. And his most famous statement was, "What? Me worry?" And when you looked at him, you'd think, this guy needs to be worried. But anyway, "What? Me worry?" And the thing is, you can kind of give him that Alfred E. Newman look, say, I'm not worried because I know how it's all going to end. I know that a better world is coming, and I can take heart in that. So you will probably hear more about the end of the world before it's all over, before it actually ends, but don't get too stirred up about it. Keep your focus, and more than anything, focus on what God wants us to do and how God wants us to grow. So when it eventually comes to pass, we'll be ready for it. So thanks, everybody, for your attention. Please have a great remainder of the Sabbath day, and we'll look forward to seeing you back next week.